So it's one thing to go crawling through caves. Now imagine doing it underwater. It's obviously not for the claustrophobic or Steve Paulson, but if you have nerves of steel, insatiable curiosity, and really love deep water, you could be a cave diver.
So I jumped in with my diving partners, Paul and Wes, and we descended down into the iceberg to shoot some footage for this film called Ice Island.
This is Jill Heinerth diving inside an Antarctic iceberg.
We got down to the seafloor and we were filming these different filter feeding organisms, and we swam into the iceberg and we kept going and going and going. And then I felt the current getting a little bit stronger and stronger. And the other thing I felt was that I had a pinhole in the glove of my dry suit. My hand was getting wet with water that was 28 degrees Fahrenheit, which is incredibly painful. So as the current was getting stronger and my hand was getting more and more painful, I turned to the guys and I called the dive. I gave them a thumbs up signal that means, let's turn around. And when we turned around, the current was accelerating so strong that we were having difficulty swimming against it. Within a matter of minutes, we couldn't swim against it. We were driving our hands into the seafloor, trying to pull our way forward, and my biceps were just quivering, trying to move in a positive direction. We couldn't get out.
We'll find out what happened after this. I'm Anne Strainchamps. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRX. Okay, we left Jill Heinerth, one of the world's foremost cave divers, trapped inside an iceberg. And not just any iceberg, the largest moving object on the planet, an iceberg the size of Connecticut. When it calved away from the Ross Ice Shelf, Jill and her team convinced National Geographic they could do something nobody had ever done before: swim inside an iceberg's underwater tunnels and crevasses and capture it on film. The expedition was dangerous, maybe impossible. So what happened?
We slowly worked our way towards the entrance, and Wes was yelling, "Help me with the camera." And I was thinking, you know, screw the camera. We're going to die. I really thought we weren't getting out. When we finally got to the vertical shaft that led back towards the surface, the current and the fresh water melting from the iceberg were descending in a vertical down current, literally like pinning us down. But I had recognized these little fish, these white, sort of transparent ice fish that were living in the walls of the ice. So when I got to that ice wall and I couldn't grab it in any other way, I started evicting ice fish with my fingers and using these as handholds to like climb the wall and get out of the current back to safety.
Wow. There were people waiting for you, right? They must have been frantic.
Oh, they were absolutely concerned. I mean, the three people, the only people who were cave divers with advanced life support, were already in the cave. So there would be no rescue. And we were 2 hours late.
God, had anybody ever explored inside an iceberg before?
No, it was a first. And when we pitched the project, I'll be honest, it was a hypothesis. I mean, we didn't know what we would find when we got there. I mean, that's what exploration is. If there was a handbook, you know, we wouldn't be explorers.
Right. I have to confess, before I read your book, it actually hadn't really occurred to me that there would be caves underwater. I don't know why not, but I'm probably not the only person. So can you...
No, it's pretty abstract.
So tell me about underwater caves.
Sure.
Are there lots?
Yeah, I mean, the Earth is like a sponge, really. I'm swimming within the pores of that sponge. Sometimes I get into a cave, like, well, inland, way far away from the ocean. But at other times, I dive into a small hole in the seafloor that enables me to travel through, like, these vast conduits, these tunnels full of water inside the planet.
How far do they go?
Well, the longest caves are generally agreed to be in the Yucatan Peninsula in the Riviera Maya. And I started exploring those back in the mid-1990s. And we were slowly linking one cave to the next cave to the next. And we kind of agree that it's probably one giant cave there, you know, many, many hundreds of miles of passages. The deepest caves in the world, again, are still being explored. But, you know, many of them over 2 kilometers deep now.
That must, I don't know, change the way we think about the planet somehow.
Well, it does to me. I mean, when I'm cave diving inside a water-filled space, I feel like I'm swimming in the veins of Mother Earth. Mm. I'm in the sustenance of the planet, that very drinking water that we draw up from the ground and use to supply humanity and agriculture and industry. It's like I'm in the very works of the planet.
How did this get started for you? Was there a gateway cave dive, the one that got you hooked?
Well, when I first learned to dive, just become a certified scuba diver, on the fourth dive of my class, I went into a place called The Grotto in Tobermory, Canada. It's a little like a swim-through tunnel that then allows you to rise up inside a cave that actually breaks the surface of the water. And that was probably a bit of a stretch for a certification dive. But when I swam through that tunnel and was moving in this three-dimensional space just by inhaling to move up or exhaling to drop down, it just felt magic to me.
It sounds like birth.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. Yeah, I guess it's the womb of Mother Earth, yeah.
Yeah, something primal. Mm-hmm. So for a long time, it wasn't humanly possible to explore the kind of caves you've explored. It's much more dangerous than ordinary scuba diving and much more technical. Can you give me an example of a time when something went wrong?
Well, I had a dive that was over 300 feet deep vertically and then well into a cave that had what we call a series of restrictions. A restriction is where you're literally squeezing your body through a space it doesn't want to fit through to get to the next big room. And at 300 feet of depth, all of a sudden I heard this loud explosion. It sounded like someone was taking a scuba tank and smashing it against the wall of the cave. And simultaneously, my rebreather started to malfunction and spew pure oxygen into my breathing loop. And that could have been immediately lethal because too much oxygen to a diver at depth can cause seizures and then drowning. So I had to immediately shut down the machine and move into a manual operation to get myself back safely. And it turned out that a lithium battery had literally exploded in the life support pack and blew a hole in the back of the rebreather. So I had to get back without any of the electronics.
Oh my God. I know what, you know what the next question is, but it's going to be, why would you want to do something that's dangerous and then go back and do it over and over again?
I mean, people are really surprised, but I think of myself as risk averse.
You're kidding.
So, I mean, when someone gives me a challenge to do something that nobody's done before or go someplace nobody's ever been before, it's just that. It's a challenge and a problem-solving exercise where I try to bring the right people, the right equipment, the right training together so that I know that I can survive those worst-case scenarios.
Wow.
People that do it for a long time, the lifers, they're a lot more like me. They're more risk averse.
That's why they're still alive.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's really, really dangerous. And I have a list of more than 100 friends that have died cave and technical diving.
100?
Yeah. It's a lot.
How do you carry that much grief?
It's hard. I mean, there are some people within my sphere of friends that I almost look at as marked for death. Like I know I won't be surprised when I get the phone call. But then there are others that just shock me to my core, and I grieve all of them equally.
Do the ones you feel like are marked, do they know you feel that way?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've had some pretty sobering conversations with friends about what worries me.
How do you even have that conversation?
Oh, man. I remember one where we were on the back deck of my home. I was having a barbecue for friends, and six of us were trying to convince a friend not to do a dive he had planned for the next day. And he kept saying, no, I'm going to make my mark. This is my opportunity. And we tried, really hard the whole evening to convince him not to do it. And he died that next day.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
What happened? Where was he diving?
It was a cave in Florida called Ginny Springs, Devil's Ear Cave System. His dive involved taking off his rebreather life support, switching to another type of gear, and squeezing through a small restriction and going further. But when he returned and his rebreather was flooded, he had a series of bottles sort of dropped like breadcrumbs on a trail to lead him back to the entrance in case something went wrong. But it wasn't quite enough, and he died literally within arm's reach of the next gas supply. It was just tragic.
And when cave divers die that far underground, how does anybody find them?
Well, that's the thing. It's something that we take care of within our own community. So we have a almost like a phone tree of cave divers with training in recovery. And when somebody is lost and hasn't come home, we gather the right people together, fly to wherever that is, and eventually recover the body.
Have you done that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. When you're underwater searching, you kind of think, oh, God, I hope we find him soon. But, oh, man, I hope I'm not the one. It's extremely emotionally difficult.
We've been talking about the dangerous side, the perilous side of cave diving. But what does it feel like to be far underground in a place that nobody has ever been before, and there's a good chance that nobody else will ever be there again?
It's akin to walking on the surface of the moon. To me, it's beautiful. And having a chance to document these places and capture the science, capture the film, the video, and bring it back is incredible. But the focus is just laser sharp. You're never so present and in the moment. There's nothing clouding your mind except just absorbing the opportunity and the spectacle.
Is there science that comes out of trips like this?
Mm-hmm.
Besides the thrill, besides the, okay, we're exploring it for the first time, why does it matter?
Oh, there's so much. The biology of underwater caves teaches us about evolution and survival. Mapping underwater caves all over the planet helps us understand the hydrology, the plumbing of the planet, and connects us to the very idea that everything we do on the surface of the earth is going to be returned to us to drink. I'm like the canary in the coal mine that gets to communicate about the things that I see. I mean, we also get to work with archaeologists and paleontologists uncovering the remains of previous civilizations and
really?
Ancient animals.
You found ancient civilizations under the water?
Oh, yeah. I work with archaeologists, and we found the remains of Mayan sacrifices. We found burial niches with people and pottery and artifacts in them. We found Ice Age bears in Mexico and extinct sloths in Cuba. There's so much inside of caves. They are absolute museums of natural history.
That's Jill Heinerth. Her memoir is called Into the Planet: My Life as a Cave Diver.